This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will talk with Jamie Wax, the celebrated actor from Baton Rouge, who's back in his home turf to have a presentation of his well-received production, A Gift for Lyman Burke. We will talk with Jamie Wax about the presentation, the production at the Baton Rouge Little Theater. Also, Humberto Fontova, the outdoorsman from Louisiana, on the tragedy in Connecticut. And we will talk with Zach Coplin, who has become one of the foremost opponents of teaching creationism in public schools, and Zach is savoring a victory in the city of New Orleans. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we begin with Jamie Wax, the celebrated actor from Baton Rouge, and the 20th year of A Gift for Lyman Burke is now underway, as Jamie has returned home for the holidays. And good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. I wish I could be that smooth. You sound so smooth. How do you do that? You have to leave my outgoing voicemail message on my phone, please.
I'd be happy to do it, but of course, you're the man on stage, and you do many voices.
That's right. Well, about 20.
You could probably do me better than me.
If you ever need a second Jim Inkster to step in, I'll do my best.
You know, once Joe Dean, the athletic director at LSU, who had a distinctive delivery, as we know, and still with us, of course, but yeah, they had a contest in Alabama at some radio station on who could do the best Joe Dean, and Joe Dean called in, and he didn't win.
I think there's a Woody Allen joke about a couple at a costume party who come dressed as a horse, and they lose to an actual horse, I believe, or a moose. It's a moose. Yeah.
Well, A Gift for Lyman Burke, one of your productions that has stood the test of time. Has it been around as long as Going to Jackson?
Going to Jackson hasn't been around for about 3 years. So this year, I believe, makes this show having run as long as Going to Jackson ran. This is the 20th year. 20 years ago, I stepped on the stage at the Baton Rouge Little Theater, which is where it is again tonight through Sunday, and did this show. It was commissioned by Henry Avery, who was the artistic director then, called me and said, do you have any ideas for a Christmas show? And I had started putting together a short story based on stories my grandmother told me about Baton Rouge in the 20s and 30s, and stills in the backwoods, and all kinds of things about the adventure of just going from Baton Rouge to New Orleans, friends of hers who lived in the orphanage on North Street. And I said, well, I've got a short story that maybe could be a Christmas show. And he said, can you put it together in 6 weeks? This show was written to, because they had a repair job that was being done on the stage, and they needed something with no set and something special for Christmas. So I adapted it. Of course, it's changed and grown over the years, but it's really been amazing to be back on that stage. I haven't been in the Baton Rouge Little Theater in a long time, and it's a wonderful place. They do a lot of great stuff for the community, and it's really special being back there.
And you started this, I guess, when you were 23 years old.
Since that's right.
You're 43 now.
That's right.
And it's about a 92-year-old man.
That's right. I'm starting to identify with him more and more as it goes by. I find myself somewhere between the old guy and the young guy, the 13-year-old version of himself. It's really, of all the things I get to perform, it's my favorite because it's really nonstop, and I'm a sucker for Christmas. I really love Christmas. This one's a very special Christmas for me. I've been working away from home a lot this year. I got married 7 weeks ago, and so for all of us to be together here in Baton Rouge and get the chance to do this show, and I don't know how many more chances I'll have to do this show or to do it in Louisiana especially, but it's really a wonderful experience this year.
Well, tonight at 7:30 at the Baton Rouge Little Theater, Jamie Wax will be on stage with his one-man holiday production, A Gift for Lyman Burke, 7:30 tonight and tomorrow night and Saturday night and then Sunday at 2. So
right.
You'll be a busy man this weekend.
That's right.
And it's a production that has lasted for 2 decades. You play how many characters?
Right at about 20. There are some small characters I have to count in there, so I think we round out at about 20.
Well, Jamie dominates the stage like few other people, and not many people can wear as many hats so successfully as you. You write this stuff, and then you go around the world, literally. You've been in many places with these productions.
Yeah, I've taken them all over. It's nicest to bring them home. People always ask, do Louisiana characters translate? And they very much do. People are kind of fascinated with Southern characters in general, but there are no characters like Louisiana characters.
Well, as we look ahead to 2013, you'll be a busy man with your new family. And you will be in other venues, including New York City.
Correct. That's right.
What's going on there?
Well, I worked on a show as a creative consultant and an actor off-Broadway this year for many months called Soul Doctor. And we ran that at New York Theater Workshop, where Rent started and Book of Mormon, the musical Once. And it went very well. And the plan is to transfer the show to Broadway the end of 2013, so we've got that to look forward to. And also in January, we're doing a workshop of the new play that I wrote, The Scutley Papers, which is a solo piece for a woman. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to say Elizabeth Ashley is going to play the role and in the workshop and reading in January. So we'll see where
that
goes.
That's Elizabeth Ashley, who was Elizabeth Cole here Baton Rouge and went off to become famous at a very young age. She was on the cover of Life magazine, November 22nd, 1963, the day that President Kennedy was killed. That's almost 50 years ago, so she has stood the test of time.
She is one of my all-time favorite actresses, and of course, the fact that she lived in Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. I think anyone who's in the arts knows about her and claims her as someone to be very proud of here. So to get the chance to work with her on my piece is really, really exciting for me.
Have you gotten to know her?
Not yet. No, I will.
I'm going to ask her about. She was married to George Peppard.
Yeah.
And I think to James Farentino, too.
That's right. That's right. She sure was.
Two actors who were quite tempestuous people in their own right. And one of them, I know, with Peppard was a very bitter divorce, but that might not be the first thing you talk to her about.
I don't think so. we'll talk about food.
She and Rex Reed
from Louisiana.
She and Rex Reed are good friends.
That's right. I was actually at the Louisiana Legends banquet when they both became Louisiana Legends, which was a really funny, crazy night. I'll never forget.
I bet it was. Yeah. But the last time you were with us, you gave us an update on your project, your dream project to be Bobby Kennedy on stage. How is that going?
That's coming well. That's the other project that's continually in development. I worked a lot this past year with a fantastic writer and director who's actually directing the workshop of my new play, Lee Fondakowski, who is really one of the people that's mainly responsible for combining journalism and theater. She's with a group called Tectonic Theater Group, and she was the lead writer on a play called The Laramie Project. And actually, Lee just came to LSU and worked with the MFA students my old theater program that I love so much, and they did a reading of her new play, Spill, which is about the BP oil spill at Swine Palace. So the Kennedy Project is definitely something Lee and I have talked about working together on as well.
Yeah, well, she was on this show, as a matter of fact.
And, great, great, great woman.
Very talented. Now, The Gift for Lyman Burke starts tonight at 7:30 at the Baton Rouge Little Theater. So Jamie's got a long day beginning with us. And if you'd like to find out more, or perhaps purchase a ticket, it's 924-6496, 225-924-6496. And in just a moment, we'll be joined by Umberto Fontova, the noted outdoorsman from Louisiana, who is gained some fame nationwide, just as Jamie has, and we'll be talking about the tragedy in Connecticut last Friday. You're a father of two. How did that touch you?
Oh, I think it's been in the back of my mind ever since I first heard the news. I think a lot of people are having difficulty shaking it, and especially making peace with the idea that it's Christmas time, and how do you accept that there's such senseless tragedy and violence in the world? I mean, first of all, my first thought is that some of the most important memories we make and that we cling to are times of finding meaning and joy in the face of a great obstacle like that. And so in many ways, this makes you hold on to the things that Christmas is all about and the holidays from Thanksgiving and everything else are all about, and that's family and the things that matter in the end. But also, I've got to say, you know, a lot of people feel helpless about this. We talk a lot about about taking guns out of the hands of people like this. I think this is a lot about I hope it'll shine a positive light on mental illness and the importance of treatment and warning signs and looking at it as a true illness. You know, if this kid were having seizures because of diabetes, he wouldn't have gone untreated. But there were certain things that maybe could have been looked at, and I hope that we'll continue to be progressive in the way that we look at that because of this. But one of the things that I'm not trivializing this to say that it would have helped in this case, but one of the things that I've got to say is that I've personally seen the arts be a way for kids who are troubled and who feel on the outside of things to express themselves and to connect, to care, to feel hope, to feel creativity, to find a voice. You know, if someone really feels helpless about situations like this or wonders what could I have done to help a kid like this, I think looking at the arts as an outlet for a child to find a voice, for a different child, a troubled child, you know, as I say, I'm not saying it could have helped in this case, but that is something we as a society can look to for sure.
297-5633 is your number. InksterShow@WRKF.org works as well. Jamie Wax, actor from Baton Rouge and worldwide acclaim for his productions, including A Gift for Lyman Burke, starting tonight at the Little Theater. And in just a moment, we'll talk with Umberto Fontova, who'll join Jamie, the Cuban-American author, blogger, political commentator from a conservative slant who calls Louisiana his home. President Obama declared yesterday that he would make gun control a central issue, promising to submit broad new firearm proposals to Congress no later than January and to use the power of his office to overcome deep-seated political resistance. House Republicans responded to the president's words in the aftermath of the Connecticut school massacre by restating their opposition to limits on guns or ammunition, setting up the possibility of a bitter legislative battle on another front. Umberto Fontova, good morning to you.
Hey, greetings, Jim. Thanks for the invite, amigo.
Well, what do you make of the move toward a change or a revision in gun rights in this country?
I sure hope we have some. I sure hope that the reform would be to eliminate totally gun-free zones. Because if we look, of course, it's not going to be that. We know that. I'm being facetious here. But if you look at all of these mass killings, they have all taken place in gun-free zones, which is to say the assassin, the mass assassin, feels safe. Okay, no one is going to stop me here, no citizen, and it's going to take a while from the moment I start shooting for the police to get there, so I'll have a lot of time to murder many people. This takes place in gun-free zones.
So you think we need more guns?
Not more, but necessarily, because we do have a 300 million in the U.S. right now, something like that.
Yeah, almost.
But we need to have them spread out better. We don't need to give criminals a sanctuary area where they can kill with impunity. And that's what's happened. What was it? A week before the horror in Connecticut, an assassin was stopped by an off-duty cop in Portland, Oregon. He killed two. He would have probably killed many more had that off-duty cop not been there with his gun to pull the gun on the guy and stop the killing. Now, as usual, that incident didn't make the news. It made the news, but obviously it didn't have the same air. And these types of incidents have taken place fairly regularly over the last decade, where such mass killings, intended mass killings, are stopped by people pulling a gun by Joe Sixpack.
All right, 297-5633. We'll take a one-minute pause and return with Umberto Fontova and Jamie Wax. Umberto, as you can hear, is an avid hunter. He began his career with outdoor-themed magazines and is the author of The Helldivers Rodeo and The Hell Pig Hunt. Back after this one-minute pause. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Jamie Wax and Umberto Fontova with us, and we are reflecting on the tragedy 6 days ago in Connecticut. 26 people were killed by a young man, 20-year-old Adam Lanza, who took his own life after a slaughter at a school in which 26 and 7-year-olds were killed. Jamie, would you respond, if you wish, to Umberto's opening salvo?
Well, Umberto, I'm interested to know you as a as someone who's an avid hunter and everything. What are your thoughts on limiting assault weapons, automatic weapons, or there's been talk of reinstating the first George Bush's ban on importing automatic and assault weapons? What do you think of that? Is there some point at which you think there needs to be more gun control?
No, because as you just mentioned, it was tried. And if we look at that decade when that ban was in effect, you know, it didn't have much of an effect. Now, here's an interesting thing. I'm obviously a Reagan backer, and I revere his memory and so forth. He supported that. He helped Clinton to pass that assault weapons ban. I think in that particular case, Ronald Reagan was, you know, he was reacting to emotion and so forth. But as a matter of fact, we have the evidence of that decade, and it didn't really have any effect on the crime rate or the murder rate. So I would love, look, I'm a father of three. They're grown now. But I could very easily put myself in a place of those parents in Connecticut, you know. So I'm a father of three, and I'm also a hunter. As a matter of fact, being that this front just came through, I'm going to be getting on my deer stand this very evening, but not with an assault rifle.
You're not coming to see A Gift for Lyman Burke?
No, I'm going to be using a bolt-action rifle.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other, really.
Yeah, Mike and on Jefferson Highway. Mike, you're on the air with Umberto and Jamie.
Thank you, Jim. I'd just like to make a comment. I don't think people maybe fully realize, you know, what we're talking about, because they're demonizing assault weapons. But an assault weapon is just something made to look like a military rifle. I mean, we're talking semi-automatic weapons. Well, there are lots of semi-automatic weapons. It's just a matter of, I mean, a semi-automatic weapon is a weapon that fires as fast as you can pull the trigger. It's not automatic, which means you pull it once and just, you know, all sorts of, you know, rounds go down the barrel. But you have to pull it each time. The M1 rifle from World War II was a semi-automatic. The carbine was. All these are semi-automatics.
Jamie, did you want to respond to Mike on airline?
That's interesting information. Do you feel that there is some type of weapon, some classification of weapon that's available that should be limited in this country that there's no use for, or do you think it's a slippery slope and it's an amendment issue?
No, I really think, again, it's the background check issue. But, you know, and they're talking about magazines, these, quote, high-capacity magazines. It really doesn't matter. I mean, you could take a 10-round magazine, but somebody who knows what they're doing, and most of these people that do this understand weapons, they can change a magazine, a 10-round magazine, in probably 2 seconds. So, you know, whether it holds 20 rounds or 10, and they can change it in 2 seconds, is irrelevant. They are taking this, quote, assault weapons term and demonizing it for political purposes. That's all.
All right, Mike, are you in favor of background checks?
Oh, strongly. Right. Absolutely. I mean, I was in the military. I own weapons. And I just think that there are too many people out there that really should own one for, you know, felony reasons, for psychological reasons, for all sorts of reasons that may be in their background. And, of course, some of those we won't know. All right. I mean, we won't know everybody that's got a psychological problem.
All right. Thank you, sir. 297-5633. Jim McClain, the owner of a gun store here in Baton Rouge, says, unfortunately, with the current administration and their knee-jerk reaction to look at either banning or restricting the sale of firearms to law-abiding civilians, it's gotten people uneasy. Firearm sales are up around the country. And this is in today's Advocate front page. Kevin, let's hear from the President of the United States and his recent remarks.
We know this is a complex issue that stirs deeply held passions and political divides. And as I said on Sunday night, there's no law or set of laws that can prevent every senseless act of violence in our society. We're going to need to work on making access to mental health care at least as easy as access to a gun. We're going to need to look more closely at a culture that all too often glorifies guns and violence.
Umberto, would you respond to the president?
Jim, let me add something here because, you know, this gun control debate, you know, this has been a broken record for 30 years. And yeah, I'm showing my age here. It's actually a broken CD. You know, if guns are all out, only goes out. Look, I was born in Cuba. You know, people talk about the jackbooted thugs coming in your house and grabbing your guns. When will we get there? I saw it happen. Fidel Castro entered Havana January 8th of 1959. His very first speech, and this is fully documented in my books, he says, "Arms? Why do the citizens need arms? You don't need arms for anything because I am not a dictator. We will, you know," and basically he was making the case for arm control the day he entered Havana, Cuba. Well, I don't think that Obama's a Fidel Castro. I don't think it's a totalitarian. But I'm pointing out the slippery slope. People who want to control others will always have this on their agenda. Well, that's all I'm making the point here.
I don't think anybody, including the president, is calling for removal of all guns, just some guns or some people. Some folks are obviously taking advantage of this tragedy. Gary Bauer, the former head of the Family Research Council, now heads a group called American Values. He sent out an email early in the week saying, "The horrific shootings in Newtown, Connecticut are a stark reminder that America is on the edge of a moral cliff. The good fight for family, faith, and freedom continues, and we must fight harder than ever before. Please let me know you are standing with us in this struggle and make the most generous tax-deductible gift you can to support American values."
Well, that's literally wrong because, in fact, the homicide rate has been declining in the U.S., as you probably know. But it's just that these things, you know, make it into the media and everybody gets worked up and so forth. That's what it is. But the homicide rate has been declining. It probably has more to do with the age of the population than anything, but it's not as hopeless as people will make it appear.
297-5633 for Jamie Wax and Umberto Fontova, and these two men, like the rest of the nation, they're digesting what happened in Newtown, Connecticut last week as 20 young people and six others were killed by a gunman who was 20 years old and had a clean record and used three semi-automatic weapons to do the job, his job of delivering such grief and carnage and tragedy to the rest of the world and to the kids at that school 6 days ago. Sarah at LSU. Sarah, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Engster.
You're on the air.
Yes. You were just interviewing a gentleman who said that he was both a hunter and a father, and that he could sympathize with the parents of the victims of the shooting.
Yes.
I thought the way he phrased that was a little bit insensitive. Unless he has also lost children to a mass shooting, I don't really see how he feels that he's in the same position as these parents. So while I'm not criticizing him for any political reason, I just think that that's a little bit of... he was overstepping just a little bit.
Well, Umberto is with us. Umberto, would you respond to Sarah, please?
Well, obviously, I can't put myself directly in their place, But I can try to envision what it's like to lose a child, for heaven's sakes. I mean, if the only people in the world that could exactly sympathize with those are the people who have suffered having their children killed in a mass killing, that's a pretty tiny percentage of the U.S. population. But as we can see from the news and everything, there's a lot of people who sympathize with them because there's a lot of parents out here that can put themselves in that condition. For heaven's sakes, of course I haven't had children killed by gunfire. Of course. That's a tiny percentage of Americans. Thank God.
All right, then. It was my mistake. Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Have a good day.
Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate your comments. 297-5633 is your number. There are very few issues, Jamie, that people are as passionate about as guns in America.
Very true. I mean, it's been true throughout the history of this country. I do want to say again, as someone who has been lucky enough to be a part of the mental health community for many, many years, of course, researching and writing my show, Going to Jackson, and working with many mental health charities and many great families of people who have struggled with mental illness. Certainly, I've gone through struggles myself. You really have to look at what the president said. I think this is about the germ of this whole thing. Is about two generations of unchecked mental illness from everything that has been coming out about his mother and about him. And I think it's about that. The fact that it is easier to get a gun than it is to get access to a mental health care professional for many people. And people want to matter. People want to have a voice. People are afraid or they're angry and they want to they want to make a statement. They want to feel safe. They want to feel powerful. When you combine that with this, with sort of unchecked and misunderstood illness, I think it's very dangerous. And I hope that this will shine a light on mental illness and the importance of treating it, of looking at the danger signs and some different things that we can do to be more proactive as a society.
Well, do you think that the lines that should have been institutionalized?
No, I think
I am not a professional in this matter. I'm just asking.
I'm telling you, there are a lot of warning signs that should mm-hmm. have been reacted to throughout this child's life, and I believe throughout his mother's life, mm-hmm. that could have changed the path of their lives for sure.
297-5633 is Umberto Fontova and Jamie Wax. Reflect on the slaughter at Sandy Hook Elementary School last Friday. Brad in Denham Springs, good morning to you. You're on the air.
Hey, brother, I just want to talk about the importance of anybody that purchased a firearm to secure it in a safe. And I think that would require an easy solution to so many problems. Theft, improper access, I think maybe in this case that's what occurred. But I know myself and a lot of law enforcement people put their guns in safes, and they don't have to worry about it.
All right. What do you think of that, Umberto, that idea?
It didn't come across too well. I couldn't hear it too well.
Well, he says we ought to force people to put their firearms in safes for safekeeping and to keep them out of the hands of people like Mr. Lonzo.
Well, I mean, what's the mechanism for enforcing that? That would be my question. That would be, you know, more intrusive than the laws that we have now, and heaven knows we don't need any more of those. So I just don't see how that could possibly be enforced.
297-5633, Harold on Perkins. Harold, you're on WRKF with Jamie Wax and Umberto Fontova.
Thank you. How do you do, gentlemen? I've got a question for Jamie and a question for Umberto. Jamie, you started out, I think, at Catholic High with my two sons when they were an art program over there that included acting, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about the benefits that does for kids that need to learn social methods of expressing them.
All right. Let's get your answer first.
And then absolutely. Thanks for the question. And yeah, Catholic High was a great education here in Baton Rouge, and the arts were a huge part of it. And I'm telling you, I can't. It sounds trivial to a lot of people. Arts programs, music programs in schools are trivial. But I work a lot with corporate groups. It's corporate groups in America spend billions of dollars trying to teach their employees collaboration. Trying to teach them creativity, trying to teach them presentational skills, and trying to teach them empathy. There are literally billions of dollars spent every year on this in the corporate world of America. The thing is, an arts program teaches all of that. If we were trying to teach remedial math and spending that much money to teach remedial math to our corporate citizens, we'd feel like our education system was a complete failure. But it also does mm-hmm. give kids that important outlet, and that's why they call it an outlet. Everyone wants a voice. Some people have a very warped idea about what that entails and do very twisted things. But if you want to help a troubled child, I'm telling you, give them an artistic outlet.
Harold, what's your question for Umberto?
For Umberto. Umberto, this gentleman was the shooter in this thing. Had in his mind that there was a terrible thing that he needed to justify, and he justified it by using guns. What do you think he would have done if there had not been any guns around?
If there hadn't been a gun, what would he have done?
He made a bomb. Who knows? As we know, the biggest child killings in this country going back to the 20s and the 30s involved church burnings, bombings, and so forth. But again, this was a gun-free zone, and it was his mother that bought these guns. He didn't buy them himself. He was unable to buy them himself. So, you know, the old, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will be guns. I mean, only outlaws will have guns. It sounds trite, but it seems to hold up over the years.
Well, the nation is fixated on this, as it should be, and it is a terrible tragedy. But would the nation be as up in arms about this if this shooting had occurred in Scotlandville and it had been 20 black kids shot by another black young man? Would that have stimulated the kind of response that we've seen the last 6 days? What do you think, Jamie?
No, because it's happening. It's happening right now, you know, in inner cities all over. And, of course, that just doesn't make the news. And that is where the homicide rate is greatest. But it doesn't affect that many people, as I was mentioned before. Not that many people can relate to it. You know, Joe Sixpack, NRA member, PTA member sitting around tonight cannot relate. We can.
All right. I want to get Jamie to reflect on this as well. It would seem that the reaction is in large part related to the fact that these are white kids, and people of the majority race can probably identify more with this than they can with shootings in the inner city.
Well, it's a shame that we feel so divided as a society that's true. You know, you can't put different values on lives. All lives have potential. All lives have worth. Look at Nancy Grace dragging out one story for 2 years, saying the same thing every single night while you know, thousands and thousands of other crimes happen that are far worse than what she's talking about every night. It's just it's an interesting
question.
You're
not a fan of Nancy?
Well, you know, I think I watch her once a year and catch up on her show.
Who would play Nancy on stage?
That's a very good question. It would have to be, I think, someone from Saturday Night Live. Maybe Amy Poehler. She'd be a good Nancy Grace.
We'll spend a few more minutes with Jamie Wax and Umberto Fontova after this one-minute pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Zach Coplin will be with us in short order, the young man who's an activist in his fight against the teaching of creation science in public schools. Umberto Fontova, the noted outdoorsman, Cuban-American who calls Louisiana home, frequent guest of Bill Maher on Politically Incorrect. How many times were we on that show, Umberto?
Well, no, he has not invited me on Real Time. As a matter of fact, back on Politically Incorrect days, I was pretty much you could call it a regular, I guess. I was on four different times during its last year in operation, but he hasn't seen me. Now, he might, because I've got a book coming out in a couple of months called The Longest Romance, The U.S. Media and Fidel Castro, and I'm hoping he might invite me on for that one, because that'll be a lot of fun, because he's mentioned in the book, as is John Stewart, as is Dan Rather, Barbara Walters, everybody that's been sucking up to Castro the last 50 years, so it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
All right, and Jamie Wax, you have been celebrated nationally as well for your work, and justifiably so. Does that give you a pulpit to talk about other things like this on occasion?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm a writer too, and I do write occasional guest columns and stuff. I don't think the fact that you have an audience for one thing should give you an audience for every political view or every idea that you have. But, you know, certainly in storytelling and in caring about characters, caring about people, caring about our heritage here in Louisiana, there are some obvious things that come to the forefront.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Jamie and Umberto.
Yeah, Jamie, you mentioned Saturday Night Live. Would working at SNL as a writer or a comedian be something you'd want to do?
Yeah, you know, that's always been interesting to me. Actually, many, many years ago, it was a possibility. But, you know, one of the things, I decided to have kids very early on, and that's always informed the choices that I've made. I don't regret anything I've done. I've been able to do a lot of great work and travel. And this is a good time with the ages of my kids and where I am to put more of a focus on New York and be working up there, which has been really great. But sure, absolutely, that's something that I'd be interested in.
You plan on having more children, right?
Yeah, I think so. This woman has organized a lot of chaos in my brain and in my life, and so thankfully...
So you could have a grandchild and a child almost simultaneously.
Thank you for that, Jim. I really appreciate that.
this must be a younger lady that you're...
She's a bit younger, yes, yeah. But much older and wiser and... In her brain.
Reginald in Kenilworth. Reginald, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, Jim. I'm not sure if you're still on the same topic about the gun control or not, but I think we should change the conversation. I was a principal at a small rural school, and I think the conversation needs to go towards protection rather than gun control. No matter how many laws we have, you're still going to have that bad person that gets some type of weapon and does something bad. But if we have protection, that might be the better thing for us.
All right, so how do we get protection?
I did a really simple web search, and I knew it would have helped in my school. There are lightweight ballistic shields. There are even some on wheels and some with that you can put blinding lights on. So if someone like the principal in Newtown wants to charge at the person, they charge at them with the ballistic shield, and that helps protect them as they're charging at them. And if they turn on the blinding light, you know, that even distracts them more, you know, and then... If there was training in how to use that ballistic shield to charge a person and then to stop the bad person, the intruder.
All right. Jamie, parting thoughts from you?
You know, just again, this is a time that I think a lot of people are trying to make peace with the tragedy and with the holidays coming up. I just think it's a time to cling to your family even more, be grateful for what we have, and to really just, I mean, our job in my opinion, is to take things that are difficult and tragic and find meaning in them, and find a way of making them into a positive, or else they'll just suck you in. And I think that this is a chance to really hold on to the things that matter, and take the sadness people are feeling about this and turn it into a deep connection to your family and to the meaning of this time of year.
All right, and Umberto?
Yeah, I didn't hear that last point too well, but if you could paraphrase it.
Well, I wanted you to respond as far as parting thoughts about what happens next.
No, as a matter of fact, let me add something here, how firearms saved my life. I was assaulted. I had armed assailants enter my house, November of 1981, suburban Metairie now. Two of them, dreadlocks, revolvers, the whole bit. They were holding my wife and my sister-in-law, guns to the head. And they came upstairs. This is a true story. This is the opening chapter of my book, The Hell Pig Hunt. They came upstairs. I was going hunting the next day. They came up the stairs of my townhouse holding a gun to my sister-in-law's head. They came into my bedroom. I was in bed because I was going duck hunting the next morning, and my wife is pregnant. They looked to the right, and they saw my gun rack. I had a gun rack with six rifles and shotguns on it, and their lives lit up. They went straight to the gun rack, lifted every one of them there, and ran out of the house. So that's how guns saved my life, possibly. They were so delighted. Now, I hate to think what they did with the guns that were stolen from me, but that's just a little anecdote to liven things up of how guns saved my life. I was holding a loaded 16-gauge pump shotgun pointed at them as they were coming up the stairs, but they had a gun to my sister-in-law's head. It was a complete showdown. And, I chickened out. I put it down because I didn't want my sister-in-law shot. And right when I put it down, they looked over and saw my gun rack, and they went, whoops! And it was two of them. They went, lifted them off. They were so happy. They ran down my stairs whooping and left us alive, thank God.
All right. Well, we're glad you're alive and hope to talk with you soon. Good luck hunting tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you, Umberto, and thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks a lot for the invite.
Thank you, Jamie, and good luck with A Gift for Lyman Burke tonight, tomorrow night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
We're joined in studio now by Zach Coplin, who's now a student at Rice University. He's a graduate of Baton Rouge Magnet High, and while a student there, he launched a campaign to repeal the Louisiana Science Education Act, which passed the Louisiana legislature a few years ago with only three no votes. And now he is continuing his fight, and you say there's a big development in New Orleans. What's going on in Orleans Parish right now?
So on Tuesday night, the Orleans Parish School Board just voted to ban creationism, intelligent design, and any sort of religious material from their science classrooms because it's not science. They also, which is another thing, it's funny to me because I'm in school in Texas now, they banned revisionist history textbooks that were the type approved by the Texas State Board of Education. So if some of y'all heard the news about that back in about 2010, it was sort of like Thomas Jefferson was sort of whitewashed out of our history books for a couple other things like that. So those have all been banned in Orleans Parish schools now.
Well, it's a major development in Orleans Parish. Will it be replicated in 63 other parishes in Louisiana?
I mean, that's a question we're pushing for. So I think first it gives us – it's a huge development. It fully puts sort of New Orleans in opposition to the Louisiana Science Education Act because about a little bit more than a year ago, the New Orleans City Council actually unanimously passed a resolution condemning the Louisiana Science Education Act and urging its repeal. And now the school boards also just basically – the president of the board, Mr. Thomas Robichaud, has said straight out that this resolution – is a response to the Louisiana Science Education Act. And so New Orleans is now fully in opposition to this law.
All right. 297-5633 if you'd like to join Zach Coplin. He has led this fight and is noted of the 144 members of the Louisiana legislature in the year this was passed. Only three voted against this act, which allows the teaching of what amounts to creation science in public school classrooms. It was embraced eagerly and mightily by Governor Bobby Jindal, who has stated that he believes in the biblical version that's spelled out in the book of Genesis as far as creation. He's a smart man. He says his degree in biology at Brown University gives him some standing on this. He has a different opinion than you, Zach.
So I honestly think it'd be an
Move a little closer.
I think it'd be an insult to the biology teachers at Brown University. I'm friends with one of them, Dr. Ken Miller. He's quite famous. He's written he's written most of the market of biology textbooks, and he actually made sure that Governor Jindal hadn't been in his classes because he would have been highly upset if one of his students had signed the Louisiana Science Education Act. And there's a lot of very good biologists at Brown, and I can't believe Governor Jindal doesn't understand how important evolution is to biology.
Well, the governor has a different point of view, and he wants to be leader of the free world, and this could become an issue on the campaign trail. In fact, you challenged Senator Rick Santorum,
yep.
Didn't you?
I think it will be an issue on the campaign trail because, I mean, it's not just about what Governor Jindal believes, but you may remember in the last month or so, Senator Marco Rubio came out he said he didn't know how old the Earth was, and he retracted that about a week later. And so the thing about that retraction I'd like to note is that while Rubio did say he's figured out how old the Earth is, he has supported creationism laws in Florida that are similar to our own. They didn't pass, but he has played a role supporting it. Or even, for Governor Jeb Bush, he's been thrown around as a candidate in 2016, and we've got this voucher program in Louisiana that's been widely criticized as promoting creationism. And Governor Bush is a huge promoter of vouchers, so we'll see if there's any similarities between the national ones and the state one.
Okay, well,
before 2016.
Now, you had success in New Orleans by convincing a majority of the school board to vote to ban the creationism in their schools. Are you going to appeal to people like Barbara Reich Freiberg and Craig Freeman here in Baton Rouge to do the same with the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board?
Absolutely. And just we'll see who's willing to ban it. And we'll gather as many school boards as we can. I'm going to ask Mr. Robichaud to come into the state legislature this spring and explain why he banned creationism and what he interpreted the Louisiana Science Education Act as. Because that's actually what we've mentioned a lot to the legislature. This is the first positive news on it for us, but we've had various school boards around the state actually discuss using this law to teach creationism. So Livingston Parish in 2010 talked about how this law was for critical thinking and creationism, and I can't remember the exact quote, but they said they didn't want litigation, but were willing to take a stand on this and get litigation maybe. Because they wanted creationism in the school that badly. And so it ultimately didn't happen in Livingston. But another parish, Tangipahoa Parish, also talked about the Louisiana Science Education Act and creationism and intelligent design in their schools. And we've had school board members from St. Bernard write op-eds about how creationism should be taught under this. So this is sort of a battle that's happening at the school board level. And
you're going to keep fighting.
Yep, we'll keep fighting it.
Well, Zach last year was named the 38th biggest newsmaker in New Orleans by Gambit magazine. He inspired a Doonesbury cartoon about the creation law in our state, and he was toasted at the Playboy Mansion. Did you meet Hugh Hefner?
I met him briefly. They brought him out for pictures with everyone. But he is getting old at this point, so they didn't want to have him too stressed out.
He's 86 years old, and I'm convinced he'll be the last World War II veteran alive.
He could be.
And the last time I drove by there, I've never been in the place like you, but he has two big American flags flying over the Playboy Mansion. He's a patriot. What time of day was this?
We got there at about 9 a.m. I'll just tell you the full story because it's fun. So we get there. I'm with one of my good friends from high school who's worked on this repeal with me, so I brought him along. And you roll in, and there's this sign that says Playmates at Play, and then you see a bunch of peacocks, and they've got a bunch of albino peacocks and rare wild birds running around the place. And so there was no Playmates while we were there because it was a sort of serious event, I guess.
A little early in the morning, probably.
Yeah. That too. But like, so we get there and it's just, they've got all these wild birds out there. And then it was just, it was nice. They did a reception. They put a tent out on the lawn and we all gave talks about all me and the different award winners about what we were working on specifically.
And did Hugh wear a coat and tie?
He was actually supposed to. His kids thought he was going to and wanted him to, and then he came out in the bathrobe anyway.
Well, Zach was at the Playboy Mansion to receive the National Center for Science Education's.
Wait, it's First Amendment Award for having that. Okay,
sorry. Wasn't it the? It was that was another award. Getting you won the Darwin. Friend of Darwin Award.
From the National Center for Science Education. There you go.
And then it was the 2012 Hugh Hefner First Amendment Award in Education, which is considered to be a fairly distinct honor. Do you have this on your mantle somewhere?
It is on my mantle right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, not many college kids, especially young men, have been to the Playboy Mansion, but you're smiling about it. It must have been a pleasant experience.
Yeah. I mean, it was great, and it was a huge honor. Like, I mean, we've been laughing about it, but it was a very serious thing and a huge honor to get it.
All right. Let's see if we can get one call in before we pause. Dez in South Downs. Dez, you're on with Zach.
Hi, Zach. We just want to thank you for the important fight that you're fighting, and maybe you can tell listeners how they can help you keep superstition out of our public schools. Thank
you. All right. So,
thank you. And sort of the best way to help out is basic grassroots stuff. So call your legislators, send them an email, send them a handwritten note because they really appreciate getting those. Get your friends to do it too. So call your mom and dad and sister or your best friend and say, hey, this is important. Tell them about what's going on and ask them to help out too. Ask them to call or their school board member. Ask your school board to get a resolution like this. And the other thing I'd like to just make a point is
quickly.
If you do know about like a public school teaching creationism, please get in touch with me. My email's on my website, or get in touch with the National Center for Science Education.
Okay. Thank you, Zach Coplin. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.